Words of welcome to our viewer and listener. Hello there, how are you? I'm Christian Corley. He's James McLean. He's just got a lot taller as he angled his camera there. And we've gathered here today, appropriately enough because it's Sunday, to discuss the repeated rumours of one Joseph Michael Straczynski's potential involvement with Doctor Who. Do you know when, way back when SFX magazine first came out? And I got the first issue. I bought it from the beginning for a good 2 or 3 years, and so I was quite. And I don't know. Was Babylon 5 on satellite TV when it first started in the UK,
No, it was Channel 4.
or was it Channel 4? Right. I missed it anyway, but I was always intrigued by it. For the first few years before I started catching up with a few episodes, and the fact that it used Amiga hardware and video toaster for the first couple of series for the graphics. But what I always remember most about it is I misread Straczynski's name, and for some reason, for years, I called him Jim in my head.
Because the JM.
The JM, which always amuses me. He's not a man who's been just sitting around doing nothing over the years. I mean, he's probably most famous for Babylon 5, but he's obviously been working quite busily, both in television and in comics, hasn't he?
Yeah, television comics. He started off well in cartoons as well. And the big names behind He-Man and the Masters of the Universe and the real Ghostbusters. They were
Wow,
all,
really? God,
he
yeah.
was one of the good writers on those two shows, certainly.
Okay.
Before he, well, not that they were bad writers, but the episodes which would kind of not go against the grain, but perhaps dig deeper, would tend to
Right.
be his sort of work, which
Okay.
he then took into science fiction with Babylon 5. So, yeah.
I don't remember an awful lot about real Ghostbusters.
Oh, well, it's worth a rewatch if you can find it. It used to be on Netflix and then it disappeared again.
Wasn't
It's held.
the was it the same the guy who voiced Garfield, the same guy who voiced Venkman in the real Ghostbusters?
It was for a bit and then it
Yeah,
changed.
right,
There was
okay.
lots of interesting things to go on there, but yeah.
So anyway,
Lorenzo, yeah, anyway.
to get to the point of this discussion, if which is possibly going to be a first, we back in 2017, when Chris Chibnall took over on Doctor Who, there was rumblings about Straczynski. And then again in 2022, when Russell T Davies was revived from cold storage, again there was interest shown by Straczynski concerning Doctor Who. And now we're coming back to this, aren't we? With because this is happening again.
Yeah, there was very recently he made an announcement that he was coming to live in the UK, but there
Yeah.
was no slight portfolio attached to it, which had people speculating. And I know other fan sites have speculated this, and I've a colleague who has spent time with him and knows that he has had a very strong interest in Doctor Who. And there are rumors that he may have been or may have been sort of actually pushing for some involvement. We don't know. It's all speculative. But again, it's an interesting point in time where I could see Davis wanting to take a step back after 3 years kind of doing what he set out to do, which was to globalize it. And whether that has worked or not is obviously speculate again, up to you to decide, but I could imagine him wanting to take a step back and looking for someone else to take it on. In fact, it would sort of sit with some of those that interview he did with Radio Times, where he sort of suggested, that the show will continue in some form or another. If you didn't take it as maybe the show closing down, you certainly could take it as a person perhaps taking a step back and sort of saying, it will carry on without me. So it's a maybe. I don't know. I think it would be a good idea. He's a prolific writer. He's written for a lot of different sort of fantasy fiction. He was behind the Sense8 series, which came out a few years ago, which was well received. I think he did the screenplay for the first Thor film. He did, I think he was involved in World War C as well.
All right. Is that the
So
one that
yeah.
Capaldi was in?
I'm not sure if I've actually watched it. So he's always had a strong portfolio of different work. He's, as you said, he's done a lot of comic work as well. He was very much remembered for his very strong run in the Spider-Man comic, which he wrote for several years back in the 2000s, I think. So he's got a good portfolio. I think what probably makes him a particularly good potential is that he's very, he's a bit like Davis. He's a producer, he's a writer, and he has a very strong opinion on the worlds that he works in. And I think that's perhaps where, as a showrunner, and because he has been a showrunner, he might be something that the BBC and Bad Wolf might be interested in having someone who is a proper American showrunner rather than what we have over here, which is a showrunner sort of by title, but not quite the same thing. And Babylon 5, as people know, it did its five seasons. He went and did a spin-off called Crusade, which went for one season, which was mangled by TNT at the time. And he did several spin-off movies as well. He's also, I think a couple of years ago, he did an animated follow-on from Babylon 5, and there's been talks of a Babylon 5 reboot for many, many years. I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's too much of its time. But yeah, I could see him definitely having interest in this. Well, as I say, I'm pretty sure from what I hear, he does have interest in it. It's just a question of whether they have interest in him, if
Well,
that
that's the thing,
sounds.
isn't it, with the BBC? Because just a quick fact, Peter Capaldi played a WHO doctor, World Health Organization doctor, in World War Z. Yes, in 2013 that came out. So, yeah, this is the thing, isn't it, with the BBC and overseas producers, less so c production companies. They seem to be very keen on teaming up with production companies, but overseas producers seems to be something that the BBC doesn't have a great track record with.
But
Maybe a
it's
bit of an
not.
insular sort of sense to their preferred working practices, I think.
But I don't get the sense. I don't get the sense that Bad Wolf Productions is letting go. So it would be a choice of the Bad Wolf. So it wouldn't be the BBC's decision, well, per se. So that's where it might be different. But yes, I agree, and I certainly think there could be, as always, a strong fan reaction to having an American vision or taking over, what has been, as you say, very proprietal British project. So, I mean, I'm not for a moment saying this is definitely going to happen. I think it's just some interesting circumstances which produce an interesting conversation to have, which is what fandoms like to do when there is a quiet time. What might happen next? And I've always thought he'd be good because he's, again, like I said, if you look at how he's handled less Babylon 5, but maybe look at how he's handled projects which of already established franchises. So, like how he took on Spider-Man and what he did there. I think that's what you need to look at is like, how does he work within products which he is not the sole creator for, rather than those where he is the entire creator vision for? He's quite outspoken. He's got, or used to, I've not looked for a while, but he always used to have a very strong internet presence. He was always very fan connected. Back in the days of Babylon 5, when there was the news groups and the likes that were going, he was very he was doing what was done later on ad infinitum. He was responding to fan questions upon each episode that was coming out. There's massive documents of the stuff he talked about at the time around the making of the show and the narrative direction of the show. So I think in terms of Doctor Who, he'd be someone who'd be very passionate, very hands-on in terms of talking to fans. I don't think he'd be disconnected. But again, like he said, I think it's more of a question like, could it happen? Is it something the BBC would be happy with? Is it something, I mean, I don't know what the sort of cost of someone like him would be, whether that would be higher or lower. I genuinely don't know. I don't know what the logistics would be and whether that's a vision they'd want or if he has got in contact with them and his vision is what they want, because it might not be. So again, it's a fascinating thought. But it goes back to what we were saying a few weeks ago, and I think this is the nub of this conversation is the desire to have someone show running the show who isn't connected to its legacy.
Yeah.
Because I think that's where I feel the show is struggling, is that you're feeling a repeat of ideas from a set of people from a similar background, similar
And the
vague.
same people as like characters and events and
Yeah, yeah.
which I think we've spoken before many times in the past regarding Doctor's use of reliance on continuity at various periods is it makes the universe feel smaller rather than being this vast expanse of possibilities.
Absolutely. And also this need to, and again, not that this has been a bad move, but you have Stephen Moffat come back, like the same time that, Russell T Davies was behind the scenes, as far as I'm aware, when Moffat was involved. There's a lot of sort of inness, so I don't want to say nepotism is the wrong word, but
No, yeah.
or and incestuous is the wrong word as well, but a sort
Definitely.
of close family of right creative visions which are so tied together, which is great in a way. It's great that they connect and they get on and they work together, but you just feel like something needs to pop the bubble a bit and someone needs to
Yeah.
come in from outside and try and take a different direction on it. That's what I'd like to see, and he would be a known quantity that I think genuinely cares about the show, is a showrunner, is a writer, and likes to try and break molds. He's written books on script writing and writing as well, so he's very passionate about the structure and form of narrative and how to write for TV, specifically TV. He's always been very interested in episodic TV. So yeah, it could be interesting. Like I said, I doubt it's going to happen, but I think it's worth a conversation because, like, what else have we got to talk about?
The weather—it's hot, isn't it?
It is hot.
I mean, this all ties in as well. I mean, obviously, this has happened. We've never really had this conversation before, though. That it has been reported on. If it was never reported on Costobis back in the day, Phillips definitely reported on the Doctor Who companion. We may have mentioned it in passing in previous episodes years ago, but something that's happening alongside this is Russell T Davies' sudden retirement from Doctor Who magazine. Now, so he stated in his last diary entry, or whatever you call it, his sort of editorial newsletter intro thing that he does in every issue, that he won't be doing any more for the foreseeable future. Now, tied to that is also the fact that Doctor Who magazine is believed to be in a bit of trouble in terms of sales. So it seems a strange time for him to not remain with Doctor Who magazine, which I think it's fair to say there's two or three things that people always go for with Doctor Who magazine. That's the comic strip, the producer's article, and maybe the letters page or some other regular feature. And so that they've lost the producer's page, that seems like a bit of a problem for them. And maybe it's suggests there's something more going on with RTD.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, because I never imagined that he would, and we talked about this at the time, that he would come back for a long
No, yeah,
stay. It
no.
was the we knew from the start, we were talking about this at the time, that this was because he was interested in the sort of the possibility of expanding the Doctor Who portfolio, pushing it global. You weren't coming in to do the same, you're coming in to do something different. Clearly, also, he was interested in sort of taking his own values of progressive values and placing them into the show as how they've evolved over the years. That was obviously an interest. But I think he's done all that. And he's done Doctor Who before. So I imagine if I was him, after the thrill of having Tennant in, the thrill of having Gatwa in, I might be at a position now where I feel like, yeah, I've done kind of what I wanted to do. The spin-off series, I think, will be something which will have interested him. But I think by and large, I could see him being in a point where I'd like to be involved, but in a sort of an executive position and not be running it. I could see that. I could see him wanting to sort of move to a sort of more of a Gardner Tranter sort of position and
Right.
have input, but not be doing the day-to-day or having the creative ownership and stress of, the work that goes into a show like that.
Yeah.
So I could see him wanting to step back, even if Bad Wolf stays in and he stays in. I think, yeah. And I could see that maybe why he's winding down some of his Doctor Who other roles, like with the magazine.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd say, yeah, I think we're probably in for, if it continues, I think we'd be on for another showrunner, but I don't know who that would be.
Okay.
But
Barry
it's
Letts
odd
in
that he's come.
1981 scenario, or 1980
It's odd.
scenario.
it's odd that he's come over. And I think from his own, he said himself that he hasn't actually come over with a gig in mind, or there's nothing that he's lined up. So that to me seems very odd. Kind of reminds me a little bit of ironic, well, coincident, what coincident, ironically, of Gardner Davis and Tranter moving over to America in 2009 without portfolio per se, to set up, which was going to potentially be Doctor Who and Torchwood, which didn't follow through as they anticipated. So, yeah, who knows?
Who knows? Interesting that you mentioned Torchwood because I've been paying close attention to The War Between the Land and the Sea, which I understand to be similar to Children of Earth in terms of format. And still no word on its release or any schedule. And I'm beginning to be a little bit concerned that it might actually get pulled and thrown onto BBC iPlayer only at this stage. If it is considered, if depending on how the BBC is currently viewing Doctor Who, which I don't think, certainly in terms of BBC One, I don't think BBC One is particularly a fan of Doctor Who at the moment. The wider BBC is obviously a different matter, and it's this vast, huge organisation, so we can't really apportion a single opinion to it. But certainly, BBC One has traditionally had issues with Doctor Who when it doesn't perform well, and obviously, we don't know what's going on iPlayer, and we don't know what's going on with Disney, etc., etc. But and the fact that they haven't confirmed any schedule for it still, unless they're going, and it was initially supposed to be coming out in the summer. Now it's June now. So if it's not something that they're going to be putting out in September time, October, then it's possibly, I don't know what they're going to do with it. Children of Earth went out in the summer, and it was like an
Yeah.
event TV in the middle of the summer, which was very, very unusual then.
Yeah, I mean I'd have thought it had been slated for autumn. I know that it was meant to. I remember hearing that it would be out by now, but I'd have thought if I was going to slate this, I'd slate it for the autumn. It has an autumn feel to it. It doesn't feel like a summer. But it's a very odd spin-off. I've never quite understood
No, I haven't either.
how that came about. I think, sorry, without wanting to judge it too harshly, too quickly, the Sea Devil plot has always been the same, and they've always struggled with it because every time they do it, it's exactly the same. It is exactly what this is, the tension between man and Sea Devil Silurian, which is the tension boiling pot situation, which then boils over. And then one is wiped out or cocooned or stopped for a while, whether it's Warriors of the Deep, Sea Devils, Silurians, the stuff in Moffat's era. It's always the same kind of story. And I'm surprised that they've gone there because it's the one thing to spin off, which I just don't see much new growth in. And also much to draw people in. I don't think UNIT's that interesting to people, not to the mainstream people who you want to capture with this. So having a Lethbridge Stewart in there, I just don't think it makes a difference. It just feels a really weird
Well, to
thing to
me,
do.
I mean, I agree with you. But in my opinion, the original Silurians is good. Sea Devils is, essentially a good retelling with the Master. That's fine because
Yeah.
Delgado's in it. The only other decent adventure story that I can think of with these characters in, or with these species in, was the Blood Heap book from the Virgin New Adventures
Yeah.
era.
Yeah. No, that was
Set in
good.
an alternate universe. That was a really, really good book. And that's the only, I mean, when I think of them, if I'm thinking of a good story, that's the one that I would come to. I agree with you. I think it's an odd thing. And I think we spoke previously, you got this opportunity to do Doctor Who spin-offs. Why aren't you doing Daleks, Birth of the
I
Daleks,
think
or Cyberman things, or something like that, rather than these people, these characters?
I think what I think is kind of funny about it is essentially the story is always a border war, and it's one side against another side over who owns land. And again, this could be arguably quite topical, which might be what I don't know if that's why they're going there, but I think to in a weird way to have three stories, which is the same border war, If you imagine it was almost like the English and the French, just because historically that has always been a sort of thing, or English and the Scottish, you'd think if you were like the fifth time doing that same story in a show, you'd be going, well, really? We're going back there? Surely. Because they're just people. That's the whole point of the story, is that both sides are people. Some are nice, some are bad, and they come into conflict. There's only so many ways you can tell that. And I think that is the problem with the Silurian stories, is that they're not Daleks, they're not Cybermen, they're meant to be people. So they take away the rubber outfits, they're just meant to be another set of humans, really. The same sort of values, kind of territory, protecting their own, believing in their own value and their own superiorities, both sides, they're mirrors. And that's interesting once, but again and again and again, it's really, really weird. But yeah, we'll see. But it does feel an odd spin-off. Of all the spin-offs you could do from Doctor Who, that just seems a really odd spin-off to do. I'm not sure what spin-off I would do from Doctor Who, to be honest, but
Well, the lack of
anything.
Daleks over the past few years has been slightly suspicious as well. Whether the conscious decision or whether something's gone on
Or
in the
Cybermen.
background. And Cybermen as well, yeah. Although, the whole Cybermen thing's a bit, I mean, the last time we saw the Cybermen, they were the most powerful species in the universe, weren't they? Essentially, when they was the
Oh, the time, there's
the
the
time
time, yeah.
cyber lord, cy time cyber, whatever they were called. So yeah, that's a bit of a problem left not really properly resolved.
Is it, I mean, like the Flux was mentioned in the Tennant specials, and then that's been it. Half the universe or whatever it is, two thirds, I can't remember how much had gone, is gone, and no one talks about it. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what spin-offs I would have done, but this just feels like an odd one.
Oh, I've got one. I've got one. Clive investigates.
Isn't he dead?
He gets reanimated. I don't know.
I see.
Wait, you get because Matt Benton's quite watchable, isn't he? I like watching stuff from Matt Benton, and he's always good. And he's just from down the road as well from me, so I can understand what he's saying most of the time.
I think what is interesting is what they haven't done. Which Big Finish have done, which I am absolutely surprised the main show hasn't done, is
Which
done a
is.
spin-off with the Master
Oh,
or
God. Yeah.
Missy. That to me is you've got an anti-hero character, especially with Missy, who is always slightly, by the end of it anyway, slightly more dubious as to how wicked and evil she was, whether there was a sort of slight shift in that last episode.
Well, no, I
You
mean,
could.
you're perfect. John Sim and Michelle Gomez in the same show.
Yeah, that'd be absolutely perfect.
It would.
And
No, it
you've
would.
got something really interesting there. You've got two of the same person. I mean, I'm surprised, to be honest, they've not done that with the Doctor yet and done a season with just two of them, and not done an episode, just done two, because you could have a lot of fun with that. But yeah, certainly with the Missy and the Master,
And
it
we just
almost
use
writes
John Sim,
itself.
just use John Sim because it gets him out of those bloody ITV procedurals for a start off.
It does. I have tried to watch them. I really want to. I've watched a couple and they're all right, but it blows my mind how they just keep making more and more of them. But bless him, he's
Kerry,
got
no,
good work there.
Kerry and I have found ourselves watching the Shane Ward thing on Channel 5. The murder on a boat thing, just accidentally once, and then we found ourselves glued to it because I'm trying to work out why we're still watching it because it's not particularly challenging. It's nice and it's got nice scenery and everything going on. And Shane Ward is surprisingly able to carry a character, which blew my mind. And you've got Catherine Tilsley as well from Coronation Street, who has this amazing way of carrying both elegance and a sort of working class backstreet abortionist look at the same time, and I've
Very specific.
very specific. Yeah, I know. Sometimes I find it absolutely stunning. Other times, I think, crikey, please don't pull that face again. That's like, how do you do that? It's scary. But the point I'm making here, really, if I'm going to get to it, is how have I found myself watching this? And I'm now into the middle of the second series. It's just like this very easygoing thing. And there's other stuff on. I mean, we're halfway through Andor and we've just stopped to start watching Shane Ward.
I mean, there's a lot of cozy stuff like that.
There
Death in
is,
the
yes.
Valley, I tried to watch with Timothy Spall. Don't know if you've seen any of that yet.
Oh, he's in it. He didn't come round.
No, he did not come round, thankfully, because I would have not had very nice things to say about Death in the Valley, which I watched one episode and was I felt it was yeah.
Is this a Welsh set thing? Is that why it's called Valley?
It might be. I don't. I must admit, I can't remember.
Okay.
It's basically a police officer who meets an actor who used to play a detective, the Timothy Spall, who lives in the same town, and they
Right.
solve mysteries together.
Okay.
So he plays this grumpy old actor. She's this sort of young, sort of slight pixie-ish, sort of quirky cop, and
Okay.
they have very gentle whodunit adventures in
This
the
sounds like
town.
an episode of Midsummer Murders from a couple of years ago,
It
which had, I can't remember who played the police. Oh, it's Adrian Edmondson played the actor who played a detective. Carolyn Quentin played his wife. And Rachel Sterling's in it as well. They're all trapped on a big house on an island in the middle of a lake. It's the best episode of Midsummer Murders in years. It's really, really strong. It's a shame they're not all that good these days. But yeah, that is that that was that was that. That's, I'd recommend that episode. But I quite like the sound of this that you're talking about.
Yeah, well, I know family love. They loved it. I watched the first episode. I just didn't like the writing. The writing did not vibe with me, the way the
Right.
characters were working. So I stopped watching it, but they really enjoyed the rest of it. There's a, is it Department Q? Department Q that's now out, which is doing quite well. I think that's on Netflix,
Right.
which is quite good as well, which again is kind of, it's a cold case one. Which is
Right.
again also very popular, the cold case stuff. There's a lot of, procedurals just seem to be the bastion of television these days. So I think as our attention
Yeah.
and our engagement withers, it's we just want something which is digestible, and whodunits, thrillers, and murder mysteries, they just are very accessible.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
yeah, they do well.
There's another one we've been watching. Oh, we finished now. There's the one with oh God, I'm doing awful with names today. The lady from Coronation Street.
Well, from Happy Valley.
No.
Well, that's the only one I know.
Lindsay. What's her name? She was in Phoenix Nights. And then she's in Coronation Street.
Well, you're just going to have to
Sally
look in.
Lindsay. Sally
Oh,
Lindsay.
sad. Of
Sally
course.
Lindsay. Set in. I think it's set in France or Spain, but I think they actually make it in Malta. Like a lot of stuff set in Europe at the moment. There's broadcast in the UK. That one's good. The Madame Blanc Mysteries. And there's also one with Amelia Fox called Signora Volpi, which also means fox, I think, which is set in Italy or Corsica or Sardinia, one of those, an Italian speaking place. That's also good. That's on that's on UTV, that one. They're quite long, and it also has Tara Fitzgerald in it as her sister. That's quite good. It looks quite lavish, and there's lovely big sceneries in there. But you're right, there are all these very comfortable crime dramas that people do seem to like. Philip was on a few weeks ago, and he was telling me that the Bergerac remake's good as well. So that's another one.
I wonder, in what way is it good? I mean, is it good? Is it like interesting, or is it faithful? Because again, it depends on.
Interesting, I believe.
That's good. Good to hear. But yeah, it's a genre which doesn't seem to be dying. And as I say, in an era where everything's quite stressful outside and quite saturated in terms of content, they seem to find their niche well. I mean, Death in Paradise having spin-offs, is an which are doing well from what I can see.
Yeah.
Again, incredible suggestion that this sort of not cold detective, but these sort of kind of warm detective things, Father Brown, which is still going
Yeah.
unbelievably, we seem to have a lot of interest in these. Which again, you go back to Doctor Who and just think there's a lot around in the market you could be tapping, thinking about, and just like, is this how we reinvigorate the show? I'm sorry. COVID
Well,
stuff.
we've talked about this before. I think you mentioned it in one of your podcast discussions over the past few weeks with regards to just doing something different with Doctor Who, and or maybe it's the one with me. And I agree. It just there's so many possibilities. I think when you were speaking to Rick Lundeen, I think there's this idea of pulling it right back down and very simplifying the whole budget side of things and keeping it very sort of like keeping the stories sort of tighter and more intense, etc.
Which I think is going to happen because we're seeing, if we look at the sheer spectrum of entertainment globally, and you say, look at the stateside, you look at Hollywood, and you look at Thunderbolts, which has actually looks like it's not made its money again.
Oh.
These big films are not they're not making their money. And as I've said to people more recently, it's like Bargain Hunt, where the idea of Bargain Hunt, which is a British TV show, if you've not seen sort of popular entertainment sort of show, where people go and buy things at boot sales and try and sell them at auction for a profit. And it became, after a few years of the show, which was a staple of daytime TV, the contestants started to occasionally work out that if you bought really small, cheap stuff rather than going and risking on the big stuff, you invariably made the profit and you won. So if there was an £80 thing which you bought, and it was more chance that it would go for £60 at auction and you'd lose 20, but if you bought a pen for £10 and it lost the same percentage, you lost far less money, and invariably you probably made a couple of pounds. And I'm wondering, I'm getting the feeling from what I'm hearing, this is where entertainment's having to start thinking. It's like, okay, we've learned now that it's not about the amount of money you can put in will make the return. It's about perhaps being cagey about how much money you put in so your return is better. So, for most Marvel movies now, they want to be making £1 billion to actually make what they want back. So if they make 450 to break even and they're not making that, and that's a lot of money, it's not worth doing. Again, it's like Joker and Joker 2. One was 60 million, one was 220, whatever it was at the end. You're creating that bargain hunt scenario. So I think maybe even things like Doctor Who, they're going to start looking and going, right, how are we going to be more cagey with our budgets so we can produce more stuff? I mean, more recently they've been saying that, morning TV is now under threat, and we've seen that they're sort of taking off some of the morning shows, not because they don't make money, but because of the way that advertising works and how they want to make money for the dramas. They want to put the money into the dramas. So I think this sort of shifting of money and thinking about how much everything costs is going to become more and more into the mix. And I think something like Doctor Who, in theory, could be axed through it, but the show it is, it doesn't need to be because we've seen how it can be done in its era with, say, the UNIT era with Pertwee, where you scale it back and it can still work. I assumed it was scaled back. I think they said it was scaled back. I mean, there was a lot of outside location shooting, which
It
isn't
was.
cheap. So I don't know. But anyway, point being, yeah, I think that's where Doctor Who, I think where all these high fantasy things are going to be doing. I think there's going to be a lot of people looking like far more like how much is this going to cost us, which is going to mean production companies are going to have to find very clever ways of creating products which don't cost as much as maybe they used to think they could get away with. I mean, I was watching the Arcane animation, I don't know if you've seen it on Netflix, which is
No.
absolutely stunningly beautiful. But that was something like, I think the second season cost something like 180 million. And it's
Wow.
like eight episodes. And I would look at Andor, as you talk about Andor, which is something like 25 million an episode or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
I know it's more than that, an
It's a lot.
episode. It's a lot per episode. And as they've said, it's unlikely that Disney will be allowing creators having that amount of money because they pretty much.
But in terms of Andor, you can see the money, can't you?
Yeah,
It
but the
looks
money doesn't
amazing.
translate into viewership. That's the
No,
issue. And Andor was not the highest rated season one. It was one of the
No.
lowest rating Star Wars things that went out on Disney, and yet it cost a lot. And the second season cost even more. I mean, I did check, it was meant to go five seasons, and they dropped it down to two and condensed, which is why in the second season you have like mini arcs of three episodes, and then you go on to another, which each is a year because each of those years would have been a season. And that again is because it just costs too much. The market's too saturated now for people to do what they used to do. And it's amazing to see how slow that industry has been in sort of working its way around that.
Well, as we've moved on to that, I think, and we're talking, Is it a good time to maybe have a look at that thing that I sent you the other day, concerning the prices of streaming?
Oh, you sent me that, did you? Yes, of
Yes,
course
I
you did.
did. I sent
The
you a
other day.
graphic. So I got this through an email. I get lots of things through email these days from PR companies. And this one concerned the price of streaming services, basically showing the price in the UK and showing the most expensive country and the cheapest country. And now for YouTube Premium, Spotify, Apple Music, Apple TV, the UK pays the most in the world. The most expensive country for all of those: $12.99 for YouTube Premium, $11.99 for Spotify, $10.99 for Apple Music, $8.99 for Apple TV. When it comes to TV, the more mainstream streaming TVs, because everyone has Apple TV. You got Netflix, the UK second behind the United States. UK we pay $12.99. United States pays the equivalent of £13.49. Amazon Prime, again, most in the United States at £11.24 or £11.24, whatever the US equivalent of that is. We pay £8.99 in the UK. Disney Plus, we pay £8.99. We're second behind Mexico, curiously. And there's a couple of software services, which I won't mention there in the list as well. But what's interesting, I found, is that Saudi Arabia is by far the cheapest for watching all of these things. And I find that interesting because Saudi Arabia is quite a wealthy country in terms of revenue per head. It doesn't have a huge population like the UK or the United States does. They're just paying the equivalent of 86 pence. Now, I don't want to draw any conclusions to that, but it is concerning that the UK and the US pay quite a lot of money to watch these services. No one knows how many people are watching, and it does feel as though maybe more. I mean, it does feel like there's a little bit of a price war between the companies, but also there's maybe some sort of, they're relying very much on particular countries to prop them up.
I suppose it also depends, like you intimated, like how many people are watching per country to its value. If there's very few people watching these in Saudi Arabia, its actual subscription value is going to end up having to be a lot less because
Yes,
your
yeah.
market value is only as much as what people pay it for.
Sure. Well,
So
I
I
think it's an
get.
interesting view at what's going on with these companies, with the pricing, because I don't think this sort of information has been widely available before. And again, we don't really have anything. I do believe I've seen something at some point, but I don't think I shared it with you, so I've probably lost it now. Concerning actual figures for audiences on any of the streaming services.
But it's got the bubble's got to be popping. I mean, we've
Yeah.
talked about this for a few years. I did a podcast with John Muir about this, about the bubble popping in the media, and it's going to. I mean, we're seeing it. We're seeing how the streamers are struggling and how they're cutting back on their shows. You think of the great era 10 years ago, where they were just throwing money everywhere,
Yep.
and the thing is, again, as always, is, well, there's two things. I think the one thing is obviously there's just so much to watch. There's too much for people to maintain all the subscriptions. So that damages the subscription companies because they can't levy what they want because people are having to share out and decide what they take. But I think also, I'd be interested to know generationally how that sort of Gen Z and upcoming Alpha will take on streamers. I mean, YouTube is obviously a big one for a lot of them. I don't know how many of them actually pay for subscription or would pay for subscription. So the question again is, does the model sustain if the younger generations, which disposable income is kind of where you want them to be putting into once they leave house? Well, I suppose they're not disposable generations. They'll leech off their parents. Leech is probably the bad word. They will use their parents' subscriptions. But how you do this is interesting. It's changing. It's shifting again. And that means the bubble's going to have to pop. There is
Yep.
there was a conversation about some sort of changes in the sort of this sort of industry paradigm, where production companies were setting up producing stuff and then selling it on to streamers as a model rather than the streamers paying for the content, which has been quite traditional. So
Yeah.
their main shows being funded through the streamers, so the streamers take on less risk, but that itself. I don't know whether that model work. I mean, it works for small independents, but whether that has any long-term model, benefit, I don't know. But yes, I mean, I think the interesting ones to see Spotify, I think, is going to be an interesting one. And YouTube, they're going to be, and Apple Music, I don't know.
I
Has
think
Spotify,
Spotify is already moving into video. So I think that is, I think I agree. I do think that is an interesting one to watch. But I also think Instagram is possibly the, it's because of how it captivates and keeps the attention. I think that might be more, I think that might play a larger part moving forward. I think that there might be a move towards slightly longer options on Instagram.
I mean, I've seen that there are streaming libraries in the US which are like literally episodes which are very, very short. And they are kind of working sort of very trashy, sort of trashy output, but hooks you in a sort of soapy way. And they run very short, I get the impression like 5 minute episodes sort of things. And
Right, yeah.
that's kind of working well as a model. But what I'm interested in is that young people always like music. That seems to be a staple part of being a young person. So where do you get your music from? Do you get it from YouTube, the YouTube service? Do you get it from Spotify? Do you get it from Apple? Do you get it from Prime? I think that's an interesting market where what stabilizes there, because that's content people always want. There's less ways to actually play it outside of either buying it or off digitally or using a subscription library. Because CD players just aren't around anymore,
No.
they just don't find them. So where young people go for that might have an input influence on where the subscription models go and where, what is produced. But the bottom line is yeah, the Netflix, Amazon, Disney, Hulu, Apple, that sort of thing. I'm just interested to see what happens with them. I'm hoping that they will fall apart and there's going to have to be some sort of aggregate service or maybe literally like a shopping cart service where you pick, there's an aggregate where you pick what shows you want and you get a price
Yeah.
per week or per month for those shows, and they come from these various, and we just lose this bubble mob, this bubble has got to burst. And then say, going back to Doctor Who, which
Well, hold on
is
before we
why.
go back to Doctor Who, because what you're suggesting there is very similar to what the proposition was for on-demand TV, sort of 30 years ago. That's how it was planned. That's how people expected it to be. And maybe there'd be like a well-known broadcaster or an internet service provider as the storefront, as your way in. Interesting.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, that would be a massive shakeup. I don't know quite how that would happen. But if anyone who managed to get a cagey agreement which was able to do that, and I could imagine, I mean, Amazon is kind of cagey in how it has, through its Fire service, through its even through its own interface, how you can actually buy subscriptions to other streaming, so like Paramount
Yes, yeah.
or Now. That seems to be almost like the start of pulling things together, but it's still too expensive. And I think we're probably going to have to wait for some of the streaming services to start dying. But then, does that mean that, well, I don't know, that might be the way it has to go. Does Apple have to sort of fold? Does Paramount fold? I can't.
Apple TV is not going to fold, though, is it?
But it's not making money.
But I think it's very unlikely that they're going to close it.
I mean, I just don't see.
They might integrate it with Apple Music or something like that, but I don't see it going completely because it's Apple, and they very, very rarely break their things if they're not working properly. They
But
tend
what
to
they've
spend a lot
done,
of time.
but I don't think they can unbreak it because it's not a technological thing here. It's a service, it's a commercial situation where they are unable to produce the content to match the costs that matches what everyone else is producing. So out of all of them, I would say I could see Apple stepping back and yes, maybe having some visual output on their sort of music service or something and amalgamating with dignity. But ultimately, I'm just interested to see who's going to fall out of the race. But then once you get rid of them, you get rid of Paramount, which I think is a struggling service.
Yeah.
Netflix, Prime, and Disney, that's a difficult one. I mean, Disney's got such a catalogue, it doesn't have to create much to sustain its
Well,
presence.
that's something I mean, It doesn't only have its own catalog, it's got the catalog of things that it's bought and things that it's got contracts with, etc. But even its own back catalog alone is massive. Anyway, given what it owns, I mean, I mentioned this before, you've got The Muppet Show, you've got all those Muppet Show episodes and movies, etc. And then you've got everything else that you can find on there. I
All
mean,
the Fox stuff now.
it's
So it's big that, in a sense, and the same with Netflix. I mean, Amazon feels very empty. We've talked about this before, but again, because it's not the video Prime service is not its leading service, I don't see it being so bothered about
No,
having to keep it stocked. You know, it has other way, the incentive for having Prime is for other reasons. So yeah, I don't know how the bubble's going to burst and how that's going to work, and where that leaves everything else, including, you know, where the BBC goes, where Doctor Who goes. But yeah, at the moment, everything is costing too much for people to sustain the market. You know, the product, the prices are ramping. They're trying to put in various features to try and make it more attractive. But ultimately, as you say on there, you know, if you've got, or each of them is like $12.99 for premium YouTube, $11.99 for Spotify, $10.99 for Amazon Music, $8.99 Apple TV, $12.99. You know, you're getting to a point where you're almost at, you know, you're very quickly at a BBC license level. And that's a lot on people who are struggling under rising costs, which have been rising, you know, excessively since COVID. So, you know, something's got to go, something's got to give. And I don't know what that's going to be.
No.
But I think some of it's going to come from the production side becoming cheaper, but that's not going to be enough in itself.
So we've got some interesting times ahead in the television and movie world, obviously. So we've as ever we'll be talking about these as the events unfold, as we have been
It
doom
is going to be so
mongering about this for
fascinating.
years.
Well, I think something which will be interesting to see is whether Superman does
Yes.
okay.
Well, the
And
interesting thing
I.
about Superman is that it's got quite a good trailer, whereas a lot of the I found it a much more engaging trailer than a lot of the hero movies I've seen over the past few years.
But yet, it's still its projected first week run, I think, is not massive. It's not
Right.
bad, but it's not massive. And when you think that's their main leader, and they've announced doing a Clayface horror film, and you're thinking, well, where's the market? You know, if DC can do well with Superman, then you could go, okay, maybe Marvel is just doing it wrong. But I don't think it is. I think it's just simply
I
people are
think
less
DC, well,
interested.
DC's mistake is that it only has two, and apologies to Wonder Woman, but DC only has two heroes that people know or are interested in.
I don't think they're that interested in Superman. I mean, I
Well,
think it's
yeah,
a good
no, fair. I
trailer,
think, yeah,
but
it is a good trailer, and I think you're probably right. He's probably a hero for a past time. It depends how this pulls off, obviously. But given how, I don't know the figures or anything, but given how well the Christian Bale Batman movies were received and continue to have a strong reputation, nothing seems to come close to surpassing those. So that seems like a very clever piece of movie making three very good movies and then just leaving it rather than trying to go on and on and on and on. And then, they've tried reinventing Batman since, and it hasn't really worked.
I thought
And
the Batman was pretty good,
right,
but
I haven't seen the Batman, but
I
it
think
doesn't have the same reputation that those movies had. It hasn't. I mean, my niece is a big fan of Rob Pattinson, and she said it was a good film. So and a lot of
I'm
her
not a fan of
friends
him,
think
and
the
it was a
same.
good film.
Yeah. So, but the point I'm making is that the strategies are completely unsuited. They've tried, and they've moved on from the DCEU, haven't they? But they. Although they might be trying to revive it. But the point is, they tried to do what Marvel are doing, but it's a completely different set of properties. And they're not the same. They're just comic books, the same. Like Rebellion didn't jump in and start doing 2000 AD movies. And, it's you can't just translate your comics to the Marvel Cinematic Union, a clone of, universe, a clone of, can you? And as DC probably found this out, but they seem to keep forgetting about it every time they bring out a new movie.
I think the thing to learn from it, and this is my only hope against the sort of output of AI, is that once you can do anything, everything becomes uninteresting. Everything becomes nothing. So with the superhero franchise, once you've toppled planets, cities, and you've done everything big spectacle, where do you go? And I think that's why the Batman kind of works, because it's rooted in something which you don't feel is so necessarily you've seen before. And I think that's where the superhero genre is struggling, is that it's done everything and now there's nothing left for it to
Nothing
do,
left. Yeah. I
unless
saw
it
just,
sort of goes back down.
yeah. Just on the mention of AI, I don't know if you saw this on LinkedIn. Someone shared this thing of this monkey, a gorilla type of thing, doing stuff like skydiving and then getting lost in the jungle and then escaping. He's talking like a human, etc. And it was completely AI generated. It wasn't like a man in a suit. It wasn't, it wasn't a Gollum situation. It was completely AI, and it felt completely fake. Like there was no, it had a, I believe it had a human voice, although I can't be certain it wasn't AI generated. But to me, it felt like if you're, this felt fake. It looked real, but it felt fake. So it wasn't engaging me. And also, you've also got this question: if someone's trying to sell you something and they're using fakery to do it, is there any trust there? What is the trust? What are you expecting from that? Why do you want these people to trust you if you can't present
Exactly.
it realistically?
Well, I watched 28 Days Later for the first time this week. I missed
Right.
it when it came out 25 years ago, whatever it was. And you have the very famous scene of him in London at the beginning, wandering around him. And if you did that now and you used AI to help create that, you'd lose it would have no spe it'd have no meaning to it, because the meaning is when you're watching that is as you know that somehow that production has got London to look empty. And yes, if you're smart, you'll know that they've done it early morning. Doesn't matter. The fact they've pulled it off is what makes it engaging and gives it meaning. As soon as you know, this is what I mean, as soon as it can do anything, it means nothing. And that, I think, is something which I think might shift. I don't think that means AI is going to go away. I think it's, well, I mean, AI is in the background of most of the stuff we do anyway. But I think in terms of the creative output, that's where its limitations will be. Again, it goes back to, Star Wars, as we've talked about before. When it was in the 90s, it was sold on the CG that it was all green screen. It was sold that this was the next new way of going forward.
Although a lot of it was models.
In Absolutely. Yeah, so much models in those first three films, prequel films, and yet it was sold on the CG. And yet when it came to the new lot, the new sequels, it was all sold on the fact that it was all practicals, even though, again, it's just, there was a lot of
Green
CG in
screen.
there and a lot of green screen. It was sold on the practicals. And I think that's where I think AI will go. I think in the background, it will be there, it will be within the architecture. But I'm hoping that creatively, that there's going to be a need for that human connection, because that is what audiences look for. That's what makes it real to them. And as soon as they know that it's all mechanical, they're not interested.
No.
So I think going back to what we talk about with Doctor Who and with all these Marvel movies and everything, I think probably what we're going to see the industry trying to do in the future is very far more sort of, I don't know, human stories. Again, maybe not with sea devils, because I think that has limits, but I think the human story is going to be there. And I think that's where Doctor Who can work really well. I mean, you could have a story with, and this is the sort of thing, going back to our very beginning of our conversation, that I imagine J. Michael Straczynski would do, is have a bottle episode, and you have the Master and the Doctor stuck in a room. How do they get out? And I could see that being it, just a black room, a dark room with maybe a door, and it's just them. So yeah,
I quite like that.
that's what I think that's where Doctor Who could go, but we'll see.
Okay. Well, I mean, we've got loads. We've talked about loads, and there's loads maybe there to come back to in future episodes, particularly the Doctor and the Master trapped in a room together, among many other things. So we're going to wrap this up now. You're getting this on Patreon, so you're getting this the day we've recorded it, and there'll be an audio version going out later on. And So thank you for watching. Thank you for being part of our Patreon. And if you could encourage other people to join, that would be great, because I want to expand this and bring some more interesting conversations and presentations to you in future. Cheers, James. Thanks all for watching, and I'll see you next time.